Okay. All right, Earl, do you want to do like an intro?
Sure.
We're here with...
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the very first episode of the Sports Parent Podcast, hosted by me, Catherine Perlman, also known as the Family Coach, and my New York Times bestselling author husband, Jeff Perlman. Say hi, Jeff.
Hi.
This podcast will be about sports, parenting, the intersection between sports and parenting, and really anything else that we kind of want to talk about. We'll also have a guest on this show. This week, the guest is Beverly Odin, the legendary U.S. volleyball player, Olympian, and one of our favorite people.
Now, since it's our first episode, we should probably do a little introduction. My name is Jeff Perlman. I'm a former Sports Illustrated writer. I've written 6 books. My 7th, a biography of Brett Favre, is coming out later this year. I blog regularly at jeffperlman.com. And I have recently produced my first documentary called Book Whore, about my life as a book whore.
What about the Quaz?
I've also done, I do a Q&A every week called the Quaz. You're more interesting. Talk about yourself.
Alrighty. Well, I've been working as a social worker for more than 20 years. Right now, I am a professor at Brandman University, and I work as a family coach helping people enjoy parenting more. I solve everyday problems like potty training, sleep and feeding issues, discipline, sibling rivalry, anything you can think of. And I write the Dear Family Coach column, so people ask me questions and I answer them.
So even though we're like kid and play, where we don't have that much in common, we do have 2 kids. Our daughter Casey is 12, son Emmett is 9. We recently moved from New York to California, not for any real reason, just kind of to have a life adventure. We enjoy traveling, we enjoy road trips, we enjoy mini-marts. We've played a lot of games of Uno, and most interestingly, go ahead.
Well, we call each other Earl, and I feel like we should explain that because I'm guessing that while we're talking on this podcast, instead of calling you Jeff, I'm going to call you Earl.
And we don't do it. I don't think we do it just to be like people think it's cute, but we actually don't do it as to be cute. We do it because we're seriously. That's how we think of each other.
If I call you Jeff, you're like, whoa, why are you calling me Jeff?
Right. So I'll tell real quick. We was it date 3?
It was the 3rd date.
3rd date. We went bowling in New York City. And I think I almost said Earl. Catherine said to me, why don't you give me a bowling name? And I said, wrote Earl on the machine. And she said, am I Earl? And I said, no, I'm Earl. And she said, well, I thought I'm Earl. And so ever since then, we've called each other Earl.
Yep. So on this podcast and every podcast after this, we're going to have a few different areas that we're going to talk about. First, we're going to talk about sports and parenting for the past week. Anything that came up for our kids, came up for us during the week, or some families we know. Then we're going to talk about news stories of interest, things that have come up in the news. We'll always have a guest to talk about something topical. And we're going to close with a 1-minute debate between Jeff and I.
Before we begin the show, we actually have a sponsor. B2 Design. They have more than 17 years of professional design experience, and they know how to create an exciting, clean design on any budget. At B2 Design, they take pride in planning, strategizing, and organizing your content to make your message clear and concise. B2 Design works with clients of all sizes, from sole proprietors to large multinational corporations such as Lockheed Martin, the American Red Cross, and the Alzheimer's Association. Family Coach used B2 Design to create her website and logo, which she loves, right? You love?
I do.
Mm-hmm. And my website, jeffperlman.com, was also designed by Brant at B2 Design. For more information, I'm building a beautiful new website or updating an old one. Get in touch with Brant Beaupre at brant@b2design.net.
Okay. So what's up this week?
Well, first thing I thought we could talk about, and you kind of agreed, is our son Emmett, who is 9, as I mentioned. He plays in a flag football league, and a really interesting and weird, one of the weirdest things I've seen in sports happen, which is early on, the head coach of the team sort of bragged to the parents that the assistant coach was a former college football player who had a tryout with the Dallas Cowboys. So you know how my brain works.
Yes.
I don't usually take these things just as whatever. So I got his name and I Googled him. I won't name the college. I'm not looking to embarrass the man. But
or the coach.
Yeah, I won't name the coach and I won't name the college, but I Googled his name and the alleged Division I school that he played at, and I found nothing. And I Googled his name and I searched Dallas Cowboys and I found nothing. Then I went to the schools. I found the school's online football media guide, looked through the roster. His name was not there anywhere to be found. And then I did something kind of weird. I actually called the sports information director at the school, and I said, you know, I actually emailed him first, and I said, my name's Jeff Perlman, I'm a sports writer. This guy said he played at your school, and I can't find his name anywhere. So the guy actually, the SID wrote me back and said, all right, we need to talk. And when I called him, he basically said that this guy never played there. He knew of him because he attended the school and I guess maybe had a tryout with the football team, never played a game, never played a down, certainly never had a tryout with the Cowboys. And the coach, not only did the head coach tell us about it, but the assistant coach, the alleged star college football player, actually bragged to me about his college football career and has mentioned it to the players. Did you find this as weird as I did?
You know what? To me, it just, you know, I really think about why people do stuff. And obviously, he's insecure and he feels the need to build himself up. I mean, his son does play a lot of football, and it seems like he might be reliving some of his lost youth.
He's reliving his non-glory days.
Exactly. And, you know, people have all kinds of reasons why they brag, but, you know, brag about something that didn't happen, you know, really, like, speaks of insecurity to me.
Now, I find the more noteworthy and annoying thing that his son plays in three flag football leagues simultaneously, and the coach bragged to me about his nine-year-old son's 4.8 40 speed. I find that even more egregious in a way. Like, why is your kid playing in three football leagues at the same time?
Well, my problem isn't the bragging, because, you know, he's proud of his son and he thinks he's a superstar athlete and the kid happens to be very good. But what bothers me about it is you can't play on three teams at the same time and be there for all three teams' practices and all three teams' games. You're going to miss something. And to me, you're leaving your other teammates hanging. You make a commitment and you follow through with it. And the other thing is, at 9 years old, do you really need three football teams at one time?
No, that's ludicrous. I the parenting thing I didn't even think about. I think it's just like, I just had this conversation with Niall Diggs, a guy, you know, used to play for the Packers, about how parents are absolutely killing the joy out of their kids' youth sports careers. And it's just like, to me, there's no kid who needs to play three flag football leagues or any sport at the same time. It's a joke.
Yeah, let's fast forward maybe six more years and see if the kid is still playing anything.
Exactly.
Well, didn't you also want to talk about how Emmitt was sort of sat on the bench and how you handled that?
Yeah, and that wasn't even as bad, but it was kind of interesting. So Emmitt, in this flag football league, you're supposed to play at least 50% of the game. No, actually, you're supposed to play almost the entire game.
50% of defense and 50% of offense, so
right.
Half the game.
So for two games, our son is a good athlete, but just a good average athlete. It's about it, right? You would agree with that, right?
Yeah, he just enjoys playing.
Right, but he's not slow. He's not super fast. He's right in the middle. But he's new to flag football, and most of these kids have played a lot. And for the two previous games, he probably played about maybe 15 to 20% of the game. And I was kind of pissed after that second game, and I went up to the head coach, and I was like, I just don't think this is right. Like, they were all excited because they won the game, and I was like, I just don't think this is right, you know, blah, blah, blah. And to be honest, I kind of expected the coach to be a jerk about it, and he was fantastic about it. He couldn't have been nicer. He was apologetic. He said it was completely an oversight. He didn't mean to do that. His number one priority is that they have fun. And to his credit, next game, Emmitt probably played 90% of the game, and the coach came up to me afterwards and was like, I'm so sorry again. This is really what I wanted, and your kid's a great kid, and blah, blah, blah. And I felt good about that.
I think there's a lesson in that. Do you know what that lesson is?
Speak up on behalf of your kids, but don't be a jerk about it.
To me, it's don't be a jerk about it. You know, sometimes parents, I mean, just people in general, we jump to the negative and our guns are blazing and we make a big to-do about it. But I think sometimes all you need is like a simple conversation to just say, oh, I just wanted to check in with you. Not sure if you noticed, but my son pretty much sat on the bench except for one play. So it worked out.
Can I also mention that we're sitting on the floor in our closet?
Yes. I would also like to mention that you look incredibly uncomfortable sitting on the floor.
I'm okay. I'm good with it. But that's because you're, just to be clear here, one of us is 5 feet tall and one of us is 6'2.5".
Okay. But also one of us was smart enough to put her microphone at mouth height and one of us kept it on the floor. I don't want to say who's who. Okay. But I think you should put your mouth closer to your mic. That's just me. Okay, so I have two things that happened this week that I wanted to talk about. One is our daughter Casey's water polo tournament. So our daughter Casey started playing water polo about a year ago, and really it was a slow start, and I think she enjoyed just being on the team most of all, but she didn't want to go anywhere near the ball, and she didn't want to be aggressive or, you know, do all of the exercises to the maximum level. And, you know, we just kept trudging along. But this week at her tournament, I heard Casey call for the ball for the first time. And she touched the ball. And even her coach said he nearly cried when he heard Casey call for the ball. So I just thought I was really proud of her. And our daughter is probably not going to win a sports scholarship. Would you agree with that?
I would. But I would say, and this is amazing. Like if you had said to me, of our two kids, which kid is going to be the better athlete at a sport? You know what I mean? Like Emmett, no doubt about it. But it's kind of, I think there's a lesson here too. Like she took up this sport. She was a non-athlete, you know, she went through occupational therapy, physical therapy as a youth, low tone, no athlete. And she found this sport very late, totally kind of by accident. And she's really taken to it. Now she's a really good swimmer. She's improving at a drastic rate. And maybe there's a lesson about like not giving up on your kids or not just like there is a sport for your kid maybe out there. You know, maybe it's you want it to be football, but maybe it's track. Maybe you want it to be golf, but it's, you know, whatever, dance, you know, but there is something out there if you want your kid to be physically. What we wanted was our kid to be just physically active, to be involved. So she wasn't sitting on the couch and we found this sport kind of serendipitously. And here it is.
But I also think it was kind of a magic coach who really took every player where they were at and pushed them just enough, but didn't push them too much. And the right, you know, league or program where, you know, they really accepted people at all different levels. And there was something for everyone. You know, you could still play even if you were a beginner. So,
you know, this is a good story, but I really want to hear about you bitch slapping a blogger.
Okay, I wouldn't exactly say that, but we did have a bit of a tussle. So I've been a little sensitive lately about people posting things online about their kids, especially pictures, because, you know, things that go online, they last forever. And, you know, there are some embarrassing naked pictures of kids' tushies, you know, at 3 or 4 years old running on the beach. And, you know, when that kid's looking for a job, even 19, 20 years old, people Google. And if your parent has the same last name or they mentioned the kid's name in the blog, you know, it'll come up. So I've been a little sensitive. So anyway, I'm reading this blog post about how to potty train your child, which of course is of interest to me. And the woman gave some pretty good advice about how to potty train your child. And it was a paid post. So it was sponsored by, I want to say Pull-Ups, but I'm not sure. And she had in the post a story about her daughter's trouble potty training and all of her accidents. And then she has a picture of her daughter holding Huggies and talking about how she uses the Pull-Ups at night. And I thought, I can't imagine that your, you know, 15, 16-year-old kid is going to want her friends to Google her name and her potty training problems, like hugging pull-ups is going to like really be the first thing she wants to come up. So I tweeted it and it might have been a little harsh.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't terrible.
You've been hanging around with me.
I might have been hanging with you too much. So I was a little bit harsher than I wanted to be. And she let me know and I apologized. I took my post down and, you know, hopefully she heard my objection and, I definitely learned to be a little bit nicer on Twitter.
I do think though, the interesting thing, I have posted many pictures and information of our kids. I don't give addresses. I haven't posted naked photos, but our son has a blog.
Yes, but posting naked photos and embarrassing stories is a different ballgame than, you know, taking pictures with them at the Dodgers game.
Yeah, that's probably true.
All right. Well, why don't we move on to the news of this week?
Okay. So if you're a sports fan, you've seen this. If you are a non-sports fan, you almost certainly saw it too. Did you see it?
I did see it.
So Blue Jays Rangers this past weekend. Jose Bautista, the Toronto slugger, last year in the playoffs did a bat flip that really pissed off a lot of the Ranger players. So now we fast forward to this year and he is beamed in a game. By the Rangers. He's on first base. He's not happy. It was clearly an intentional drilling by Texas's pitcher, Matt Bush. He slides late into second. The Texas second baseman, a young man named Rougned Odor, does not take kindly to it, shoves Bautista, words are exchanged, and then pop! Hardcore, one of the best pure punches I've ever seen in a baseball brawl, ever. And what was interesting about this was my son Emmett, our son Emmett, who was 9, was sitting there when we were watching the replay of it. And I felt a little weird at first because it was clearly, everyone was excited by it. It was like watching an old like Leonard Hagler fight. It was like pop and people went crazy. And I was thinking, I don't know if this is such a good thing. But then, and we've talked about this before, that your kids are going to be exposed to things, you know, and lots of things. And I play rap for our kids. You know, they've seen movies that maybe other parents wouldn't allow their kids to see. So maybe it wasn't such a big deal. But there's something about the brute physicality of it that definitely made me think, I don't know.
Yeah, but to me, I mean, it's why people watch hockey. You know, they watch hockey because it's exciting and there are a lot of fights. But it's stupid. I mean, he threw a bat that was bad. But then you're going to punch him a year later? I mean, it just seems ridiculous.
Well, do you think it's ridiculous to... So he was beaten by a pitch, which was intentional. It was clearly intentional. It was like payback.
I think that's also stupid.
So should there be no payback?
Yes, there should be no payback. They should act like sportsmen.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. It's all dumb. I covered baseball for a long time, and there's a code, and it's the dumbest code in the history of the
world. But it feels like a phony code. It feels like this,
it's
like,
not a phony
we
code.
Have to, you know, hit you with the baseball because last year you threw a bat at us.
It's no phonier than any other code. They take it very seriously. It means something to ballplayers. It's one of the few things. I guarantee you, most members of the Rangers and Blue Jays couldn't name guys who played for those teams 30 years ago. But the code has been passed down from generation to generation. Is it dumb? Yes. Is it moronic? Yes. Is it poor sportsmanship? Oftentimes. But it's something that has been a part of the game for a long time. You don't showboat. You don't show up the other team. You don't show up the other pitcher. I'm not saying it's right, but it is what it is.
Okay, so what's your prediction about the punishment for...
Oh, it's going to be severe. I could see a 15 to 20 game. Because it's interesting. If we weren't caught on TV the way it was, if we wasn't caught on video the way it was, and also social media, the impact that had, I mean, that was the punch heard around the world.
I was thinking that.
So it's going to be severe.
Okay. Well, we shall wait and see. So there was a story that caught my eye this week, and it's about Sierra Applebaum. She was a volleyball player who had a scholarship to Wake Forest University. And she said the scholarship opportunity was a dream come true for her. She was very excited to be there. But then she met the coach. And Applebaum describes the coach as abusive. He cursed, he yelled, he kicked her off of drills unreasonably, and used excessive physical activity as punishments. Sierra wrote, "I completely lost my passion for the sport. Volleyball, once my personal safe haven, had turned into my living hell." So she decided to quit the team her sophomore year, and then after a 15-minute hearing, the school decided to revoke her scholarship.
Yeah.
No, not yeah. So this young woman, she wrote a nice article about her experience, and to sum up her experience, in the end, what was a horrible situation led to some good things. She became a journalist. She made other friends. She developed herself in other ways. But I just thought, how wrong is it to recruit someone to play in your school, then you treat them badly, and then you pull their scholarship?
Well, you know, the NCAA is evil, and the...
Well, it wasn't the NCAA that did it. It was the school.
What I'm saying is that you're allowed to do that. You know, there are very few safeguards for athletes. I was a member long ago. University of Kentucky had a basketball player named Roderick Rhodes, and the coach, Rick Pitino, who we all know, basically kind of got tired of having Roderick Rhodes on his team. And basically said, yeah, you should go elsewhere, even though he had a full scholarship. Scholarships at most places are year to year. It's not a 4-year scholarship. It's a year to year scholarship that can be taken away for myriad reasons. So that's my favorite word. So it's not surprising. And these coaches, I know so many coaches over the years, Division I coaches, who are just complete anuses, and they have no moral compass. And obviously this young woman was, you know, righteous and trying to do the right thing. And this guy was just a douche.
You like to say the word douche.
I do, because it's not a curse, but it sounds like one.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Sierra.
Different story. There's a Texas school district. You really love this one. That voted to build a very tasteful, just a beautiful $62 million high school football stadium.
Nearly $63 million.
Yeah, as reported in Slate, McKinney, Texas, well-known town, actually. Have you heard of McKinney?
I have not, but...
Well-known for high school football, voted to publicly finance the construction of a new $62.8 million, 12,000-seat high school football stadium. Once completed, the new stadium will host the three high school teams in the district. I don't even know what to say about this. It's really messed up. But, you know, anyone who read Friday Night Lights by Bissinger, or then watched the book, read the book, or saw the movie. This isn't Does this shock you?
Okay, it doesn't shock me, but it disgusts me. Shall I say why?
Well, the stadium has a Jumbotron. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's good. I know that sports, and especially football in Texas, is big business, and it's like the lifestyle, and I totally get that. But I also know that there are a lot of schools that are underfunded in Texas. There are a lot of students that are living in poverty, and to me, to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on football while kids probably are going hungry in those schools, I guarantee there are kids that are living in poverty and going hungry. Like, I can't imagine being one of those kids.
All right, I'm going to do an impersonation for you real quick. Tell me who I am. You don't want my life.
I got no clue.
It was James Vanderbeek in Varsity Blues, and played a quarterback in Texas. He had the worst accent ever.
The whole
movie was about, you know, this town that was crazy about football in Texas and how, like, it was ruining these kids, and it was a horrible movie, and he was horrible. But the point, I mean, it's insane. And what happens is, what I see a lot, is you give these kids all this glory in high school, and they're the kings of the hill, and it is all downhill. Like, it's all downhill. Their greatest moment comes at 17. So when you're 17 years old and you're the star halfback for McKinney High School or whatever the school is, and you're set up to think that this is going to be life and the glory. And what's the most important thing in your life? Sports, not academics. They don't celebrate academics. They celebrate sports. And then, you know, poof, what happens after that?
Okay, but so should people not have thrills in high school just because the rest of life isn't going to be that thrilling?
Oh, come on. You know what we're talking about here. I'm not saying they shouldn't have thrills. I'm saying let's have our financial priorities in place here. As you said, you know, Texas, thanks in large part to some really backward governors and some really backward school boards, has some of the worst academic records in the country. I mean, it's embarrassing. And here's a good reason. Look where the focus is.
Yeah. I agree.
Up next,
We're here with Bev Oden, our longtime friend. I guess you're a friend. Can we say you're a friend?
Yeah, I guess so.
Longtime friend. Can I call you a legendary volleyball player? Is that fair? I know you don't like these labels.
I don't like those labels. You can just call me a former volleyball player, yes.
Former Olympic volleyball player, NCAA Player of the Year at Stanford. Has seen a lot in the game. You know, we sent you a link to the story that we were referring to, which is the coach at Wake Forest and the player at Wake Forest. And, I mean, you've been around the game for many, many, many moons. I'm not trying to make you sound old, but you have.
Wow.
Is this a surprise? Do you consider this a surprising sort of thing? Or is there any sort of precedent for coach-player relationships like such?
Oh, goodness gracious. This happens all the time. And I can say it's happened to me, actually. And so when I was reading the article, I was very, I guess I'm still disappointed whenever I see something like that, but I'm not surprised. I think in the world of sports, there's a real fine line between being a tough coach and being an abusive coach. And this guy at Wake Forest definitely crossed the line. And I think I've had some coaches cross the line as well. And it's really hard to be that person that's going to put an end to it all.
Can you tell us like a little bit about your experience? Like what kind of, you don't have to say what coach, but you know, what kind of experience have you had?
Well, you know, I think becoming an Olympic volleyball player is, it's not easy, right? You don't expect it to be easy. It means that you're going to have to really, put a level of dedication into your sport that, they ask a lot of you. I will say that. And that's normal. When I was growing up, though, you know, and being young and being a junior, and I think it's a little harder to do now because parents are a lot more involved than they used to be. So mine was in high school, and it was pretty much just emotional abuse, sometimes physical. But it was we were scared to go to practice. When they were saying that about, you know, every day I'm scared to go to practice, like we would get just super nervous when we're getting closer and closer to the gym and not knowing what was going to happen in there. A lot of verbal abuse, emotional abuse. We were afraid to quit even because quitting was letting your team down and you didn't want to let your team down, you know? So we went through all this stuff and, you know, there was some physical, like, contact, you know, when we would do something wrong, but it was mostly the verbal abuse that was bad. It was mostly, belittling us and making us feel less than, like we needed this so bad that we needed to endure this kind of treatment. And now that I'm older, I can see that that was really inappropriate. But when you're young, you're like, I guess this is volleyball. I didn't know volleyball could even be fun until I got to college. It was a job, and it was kind of a nightmare, I have to say.
What would be, give me an example. Like, what would a coach, what kind of thing would a coach say that you consider like cross the line? I know you're not a cursor, so I'm not asking you to curse, but like, what kind of stuff would a coach say?
Well, how do you know the difference also between what's like normal pushing you hard and abusive?
Right. And I can't answer that question. I feel like, you know, certain people handle it better than others, right? Like, you know, there are certain girls, and we were girls at the time, who can handle a coach saying, you know, you really messed that up, or, you know, I'm not going to curse. And our coaches really didn't curse. They didn't need to. It was more like playing with our minds. And it's hard to explain this, but it's like there was so much pressure put on us to perform that we were afraid to make a mistake. It was like you would get a verbal tongue lashing, and you would get kind of it was more like talking about like you're what you are not, you know, kind of like beating you down confidence wise. Like, I'm trying to come up with some of the terms that he would use, but it was more beating into your self-confidence and your intelligence a lot.
Wait, let me ask you a question, Bev.
Stuff like that.
Does it, you know, there's a long, long, long history of this stuff, and a lot of successful coaches up through the professional ranks have done this. So as awful as it is to a kid or to a young athlete, can an argument be made that it works?
Absolutely. And this is what I struggle with all the time, because I do not know that I would be an Olympian sitting here in front of you today had I not gone through that. And that bothers me. It really does, because it makes me wonder, like, did I have to go through that in order to get to the level I got to? One thing that coach would tell us is that you're not going to go through anything harder than what you're going through with me. This was in junior high and high school. And I can honestly tell you, I have not gone through anything harder than I went through at that time. College, easy after that. The national team, easy after that. There was just nothing anybody could do to me. I was pretty much unflappable. And, you know, that's why. I can't say that's not why.
Well, but here's the thing that makes me think of. Okay, so you were an Olympian.
Yeah.
But there are so many people who are playing sports, and presumably this girl at Wake Forest maybe never going to be Olympians. They're playing sport because they enjoy it, because they're good at it, because it's good, you know, to be part of the team. It's good for their bodies. And so, you know, I struggle with, if you're not going to be at this elite level, you know, is that really necessary?
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem, is you don't really know, especially at the younger ages, who's going to be who. And so you also don't know which kid is going to respond well to a certain kind of coaching and which kid is going to collapse, you know. But I think in sports, you have to be able to perform under pressure. And in order to do that, you have to put these kids under pressure in practice. And I think once you start to get into the drills and start to really get on some kids that are, certain kids need to be pushed, you know, because they aren't working hard enough, you know, and other kids are working hard enough from the get-go, so you don't have to push them as hard. But anytime that we're in a situation in a game or in practice where they are not performing up to the level the coach wants, that's when you kind of find out, once you start pushing, it's kind of a trial and error kind of situation where you see kind of who kind of dissolves under the pressure and who kind of rises to the occasion and who can handle it. I mean, I've had some kids start crying on me after I, you know, just got on them and on them and on them. Is that bad? I don't know. I mean, I think for the most part, it does kind of make you tougher, and it does kind of make you able to handle a lot of things. And I think that unflappability that I had is kind of a necessary thing in sports. You have to be able to not react to any kind of outside circumstances. I mean, even heckling. So if we go into a gym and there's somebody talking about your mother or your sister or whatever, you got to be able to still perform. So, I mean, they do have to learn that in practice. You can't just get into a game and expect them to be able to do that. So I think it's a real thin line, and it's tough, and it's hard to tell when you've crossed the line. But I think it's kind of up to you to kind of pay attention to whether you're doing damage, and that's the big thing.
So do you think if I heckled you throughout this podcast, you'd still be able to answer with composure?
I would heckle you back. That's what I would do, and I would enjoy it very much.
That's fair. All right, Bev Oden, thank you so much for being our first ever guest on our first ever podcast. You win a free autographed copy of Jeff Perlman's self-help book, Jeff.
Oh, gosh. Wow. That is all I've ever dreamed of. And I'm so happy that I was able to be here with you two today. My favorite couple. Great, great, great that you're doing this podcast together. I'm excited to listen to what you guys have in store for us.
Thank you so much, Bev.
All right. No problem. Have a good one.
We're back. And we're going to wrap up every show. This is obviously our first show, so everything's new. We're going to wrap up our show with what we call the one-minute debate. We're going to pick a subject. We each get 30 seconds. I'm literally typing in on my iPhone. I'm doing the timer. We each get 30 seconds. And because are we still new to Southern California?
I feel like we're still new, even though we've been here a year and a half.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So we're going to have a debate. We each take a side. We each get 30 seconds. I'm going to let Earl, Catherine go first. Our debate today is, what do you hate more in Southern California, the pizza or the bagels? So
I'm going to take the pizza side.
I'll take the bagel side. So I'm going to give you 30 seconds. Are you ready?
Yeah, show me the clock so I know how much time I have.
Ready, set, go.
Okay. Why the pizza is so bad and so wrong in California is the sauce. The sauce, it's like out of a jar. Like, no, a can. It's terrible. The cheese, it doesn't get super melty. It's kind of clumpy, and it's just not smooth like it is in New York. The crust, oh my gosh, there's no bubbles. There's no color. It's thin and small. Every store here has to put New York in the name, which means it's trying hard to pretend it's something it's not, and they don't give you slices. They have to sell the whole pie instead of the slices. Boop, I'm done.
30 seconds.
That was pretty good. I almost got everything in.
All right, nice job. All right, I'm gonna take the bagel side. And
now you're going to say why you hate bagels more than
pizza. Why the bagels are a bigger drop-off than the pizza.
And all right.
Here we go. First of all, I'm going to say that what Catherine Earl is not telling you is that we spent plenty of time in New York eating a California pizza kitchen, which basically is the same crappy pizza we get out here. That being said, the bagels are just crap. First of all, you can't get any that have any sides. In New York City, you go to H&H, Essa Bagel, a million places. They're fat and they're doughy and they're delicious. Here, they're all flat. The worst thing is they all say they're New York bagels, but they're not New York bagels. I don't even know. We go to a place called East Coast Bagels. The guy's never been to the East Coast in his life. It's nonsense. They taste like crap. It's a horrible thing.
Okay. But I know we're debating this, but I think we'll both admit that the pizza and the bagels suck in Southern California.
It's a big disappointment.
All right.
But the sushi is killer and the poke is pretty great.
Ooh, pokey. Okay, so we would like to ask you who won this debate. If you think that I, Catherine Perlman, won the debate, please tweet at the family coach if you think that I won. If you think that Jeff won, tweet him at Jeff Perlman. And please use the hashtag the sports parent so that we can find you. And you can also write on our Facebook pages, Jeff Perlman on Facebook, and you can find Catherine Perlman at The Family Coach. We will end up putting all the links and information on the topics that we discussed in the show today on our website, which will be www.thesportsparent.com.
Nobody says www anymore. That's very old school.
Okay, thesportsparent.com.
Much better.
Okay. And you can check out Jeff's website. I won't say the www. Oops, I did it anyway. JeffPerlman.com. And you can check out his amazing blog, which I sometimes read and sometimes don't for the sake of our marriage. And take a look at The Quaz, which is Jeff's amazing Q&A series. What number are you up to?
257 coming this week.
257 weeks he's been doing this, which is
amazing.
And
you can go to Catherine's website at thefamilycoach.com. We want to thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to The Sports Parent on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. And if you liked our show, please go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a review if you can. The first 5 reviewers, this is very special, will win a free signed copy of one of my books, probably Showtime, my latest release, or a 15-minute consultation with the Family Coach. Also, if you have any topics you'd like us to discuss on the show, please send us an email to Catherine, that's C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, at thefamilycoach.com. Until next week's episode of The Sports Parent, win or lose, take your kids for ice cream after the game.
So that went pretty well.